yesterday was the first we heard about this wacky astronaut story. NASA astronaut Lisa Nowak, who apparently flipped out a little bit and was involved in a love triangle.
A little bit. She wore a diaper for 900 miles.
Yeah, and, you know, let's talk about that for just a second before we bring our guest on here. When you're going to do something bad against somebody, are you not allowed to pull over and use a public bathroom?
Yeah, how much time
you got to stop and
take?
Get gas anyway.
She would have had to get gas.
You can't 900 go 900 miles on a tank.
You're absolutely right. So
I mean,
while
900 miles, you stop every 200, 300 miles?
The fact that the you got the nozzle in there refilling the unleaded, you can't take a break while that's doing on to use the giant key to get in the, the bathroom there? Apparently
she was
not.
She's desperate.
So what's the latest on the story this afternoon? She's back in Houston, right?
She is back in Houston, and they are the space agency itself says, the space agency, NASA, says they're going, I'm all official now. They're going to take a look at their evaluation process to see if there are any modifications needed. She is going to have a medical assessment of her, and her fellow astronauts say there were no signs of instability.
So. All right, she's out on bond.
She's out on bond.
For the assault charges and the attempted murder charge that they hit her with, and the kidnapping charge and all that sort of stuff. All right, well, let's bring Homer Hickam in to talk about this. Homer wrote a wonderful book almost 10 years ago called Rocket Boys, which got turned into an almost as wonderful movie called October Sky. It was about his life growing up in coal mining country in West Virginia and being fascinated with rockets, and it kind of paid off for him because he became an engineer for the U.S. Army Missile Command for 10 years and then was an aerospace engineer for NASA. And then he worked at NASA training astronaut crews. That was the main job there. In fact, he was the payload training manager for the International Space Station program, and he worked on the space lab and space shuttle missions. Homer, welcome to KMOX.
Well, hey, Paul. It's always good to talk to folks in St. Louis, one of my favorite cities in the country.
Well, thank you. It's nice to have you on here. So you worked with these astronauts. Tell us a little bit about what goes through, what has to go on psychologically to make sure that somebody isn't going to flip out like this Lisa Nowak in the astronaut corps.
Well, NASA doesn't actually do very much in terms of giving any kind of psychological counseling to the astronauts once they're chosen. They do go through a detailed series of tests before they're picked, but afterwards they're kind of left on their own. And the stress that these astronauts have that might cause the need for psychological counseling really doesn't have anything to do with the training or the flying. That's the fun part of being an astronaut. The bad part of being an astronaut, the downside of being an astronaut, is that there's over 100 of them, and they're all vying for the same few seats. There's way too many astronauts. So basically, they end up fighting and competing with each other for a chance to fly into space. Once they fly into space, they come back, they go into kind of a black hole funk, and I saw it many times with my crews that I train. And they went to the back of the line, and some of them just couldn't take it. They would resign, retire, get out of the program. One of them told me one time the happiest day of his life was when he was chosen as an astronaut, and the second happiest day was when he left the astronaut corps.
Because they have kind of a post-space depression?
Yes, there's no question about it. Well, it's like anything. You know, when I trained the astronauts, like for the Space Lab J mission, which was the first Japanese American human spaceflight mission, I trained and worked with the astronauts on that one for over 6 years. And then we flew. It was a 10-day mission, and when it was over, it was like, somebody just pulled the rug out from under all of us. But I recognized that condition because when I came back from Vietnam, oddly enough, I felt the same way. And I couldn't figure out why for the longest time. I just kind of drifted along, and then I realized, hey, I missed the excitement. I missed being in the middle of something that was historical, and I better figure out something else to do that's exciting. So I did that. I became a scuba instructor. I ended up working for NASA, and now I'm a writer. And so I've kept adventure in my life, but a lot of these folks that get into this program, they find challenges that are not the ones that they thought that they were going to have to endure. And again, most of it has to do with the dysfunctional astronaut office that they work within.
Yeah, it's been this year marks 46 years since Alan Shepard's historic first flight. That's a lot of astronauts that have gone through NASA in nearly a half a century. Have there been others that have flipped out that we just don't know about?
I wouldn't say flipped out. This is an extreme, bizarre case. But very definitely, I actually know several astronauts who have resigned and left under a cloud based upon extramarital affairs or just doing something stupid that they knew better than doing, and it was brought on by I believe by this unnecessary stress that their office puts on them. You know, the way to alleviate it, in my opinion, you don't need that many astronauts. If that's only the few seats that you got to fly, have a small professional core set of astronauts, and bring in from the outside scientists and engineers that are truly the best and brightest of our country. Bring them in. They're like a fresh air brought into the agency. Fly them into space rather than put this small, it's 100 people, is not small, but this group of people together in cubicles like they do down in Houston. It's almost like a Dilbert setting, and kind of set them at each other, you know, tooth and nail, claw and nail, to get one of those seats to fly. I mean, that's just the definition of psychological stress.
Yeah, but apparently tooth and nail are not the only body parts involved here. I mean, there's Lisa Nowak and the other astronaut, Bill Offaline. I don't know whether they actually were involved or not, but certainly she had designs on him, and there have to have been some romantic hookups through the years as well. Does NASA pay attention to that?
Well, not as much as they should, and I think, you know, it's just normal. You put healthy young men and women, bright, intelligent, together in a pressure cooker. What do you think you're going to get? You're going to get that type of thing. It not only happens between astronauts, but between astronauts and the training personnel that they work with.
Are they all in a bubble? Is that why?
They are in a bubble. They're a really peculiar bubble. They're inside a black hole within a bubble. The black hole is their office. As long as they outside of that black hole, they're kind of treated with all due respect. I mean, even the ones that haven't flown or probably never will fly, they still get to wear the blue suit and be an astronaut. And so everything they say, it's like God said it, and it's the gospel. But once they're back into the black hole of their office, just about nothing they say is right. I mean, everything that they say and do is looked at as maybe a negative mark against them flying. And so they're under this just really peculiar set of psychological duress.
A lot of companies have sexual harassment discussions with their employees.
Yeah, on the Paul Harris show, we don't call it harassment. We call it harassment.
That's just show content when it's harassment.
A lot of corporations take this very seriously, or at least they purport to. Is this something that NASA has in its training manual, thou shalt not look through your lens at another astronaut?
You're not check out the next cubicle?
Yeah.
No. Not at all. No, not at all. I mean, they're obviously considered adults and professional. They know that they're national icons and that they should act like it, at least. But there's no, to my knowledge, there's no counseling done to them. I never ran across any of it. And I saw some, you know, I would go out. I was older than most of them. I was a combat veteran. They knew that I'd already published a book, Torpedo Junction, that was a bestseller. They knew that, toward the latter part of my career, they knew that I was going to go on and be a writer and do other things. So they tended to let me take them aside, even though I was just a lowly training guy. And we would talk over things. And sometimes I think I got some of them through some of the stress that they were going through. But most of them, they just don't, they're afraid to turn to anybody. And I think that NASA's got to change that. And again, I think the best way to do that is to start bringing people in from the outside and let them be part of the crews and not just let it be the same tight little cloister that they find themselves within.
You know, it's interesting, Homer, that you mentioned that they're national icons. I bet if you asked most Americans, they could not name an astronaut from the current program or even since maybe Krista McAuliffe.
Well, I agree with that. I know that that's true.
And we've had astronauts on the show, and they're all the ones who have flown and have come in to do presentations for schools and the St. Louis Science Center, and they're all wonderful, and they're good spokespeople. But the problem is that Americans don't pay attention to the space program. Most people wouldn't be able to tell you, do we even have any Americans in space right now?
Yeah, but a lot of the astronauts don't realize that. You got to understand.
Oh, they're still living like the Mercury 7
yes.
and Neil and Buzz?
Black hole in the bubble.
That's the bubble they're walking within. I mean, they when they step out, and they're wearing a blue suit, whether you know their name or not, I mean, you just naturally elevate them into your thinking process. And so, and most Americans, they go into schools and and the kids cheer and clap at them, and you know, hey, it happens to me too. I know how that goes. And then you come home and you got to clean the litter box out. that's one of my many jobs at home.
You should get that Lisa Nowak diaper for your cat.
But I would say to people like you, is your birthday coming up, I believe?
Yes, it is.
But for people like him, we may not know astronauts, but his book, October, is my son's favorite book. So he knows of you and of your work, and you guys have the same birthday.
Wow.
Yeah, well, I just had to tell you that.
A true rocket boy.
Obviously. True rocket boy, yes.
Homer,
giving my best.
Homer, this woman, Lisa Nowak, won't fly again, will she?
No, she won't fly, and I fear the young astronaut that she was involved with won't fly ever again either. That they just simply couldn't take the chance, I don't believe, of letting either one of them on a space shuttle again.
And what about NASA's image now? Has it been hurt by this whole thing?
Yes, no doubt about it. There's no use pretending otherwise. But the seeds of this have been out there growing for a long, long time. And so we've seen situations where astronauts have had to resign or retire because they got themselves into trouble. And it's because of this huge stress that they're under, this unneeded stress I keep coming back to.
Yeah.
And so I'm hoping that something positive comes out of it, and that is that they take a look at that office itself and say, wait a minute, you know, what are we doing putting these wonderful kids in this situation and stressing them beyond all possibility of being able to withstand it, just to get a seat to fly on this thing. The astronauts themselves, it's like the Cardinals picking the Pope in terms of getting a seat on the space shuttle. They have no idea how or why they're selected, and all that needs to be opened up. And again, I think a lot of it could really help if there weren't so many of them vying for the same few seats, and they also brought people in from the outside and flew them and let them bring some reality into the life of some of these astronauts.
Homer, were you able to bring up these kind of criticisms when you were inside the astronaut office yourself and helping to train them?
Yes, I did. I proselytized big time.
And they didn't pay attention?
They paid attention, but, the office, the astronaut office is a bureaucracy inside a greater bureaucracy. Bureaucracies tend to want as much power as they possibly can have. And so they might recognize that I might have something, you know, of value to say, but ultimately it kind of comes down to power.
Yeah. Well, I really appreciate your insider's perspective on this. Now let's plug what you're working on as a writer.
Well, got a new book coming out this June called The Far Reaches. It's the third in the Josh Thurlow World War II adventure series that I've been writing. And then I've got a new book called The Red Helmet that's set in coal mining West Virginia that I'm working. And then I've signed to co-author the memoir of Anousheh Ansari, the Iranian-American woman who flew into space with the Russians this past fall.
Terrific.
And that's the kind of person we need to be flying.
Is that the Ansari family that put up the $10 million for the X Prize?
That's her.
Yeah.
Yeah, great woman. And, when she wanted to go into space, NASA wouldn't even consider flying somebody like her, or let's say Bert Rutan, who built the spaceship. They wouldn't even consider it. And that's what's wrong with NASA's selection program right now. They need to bring people in like Anousheh and Bert, come in from the outside with all of their fresh new ideas, fly them, get some really good science from the top flight scientists we've got, and stop putting these 100 kids in blue suits. I call them kids because I'm 64 years old. I'm allowed to do that.
Yeah.
put in blue suits and stick them into this hole down in Houston.
Yep.
And put all this pressure on top of them, and make them compete against each other for these few seats. I mean, it's just cruel.
I agree. I appreciate your expertise here this afternoon, Homer. Thank you very much.
My pleasure.
Homer Hickam, if you haven't read his book, Rocket Boys, which was turned into the movie October Sky, and now the book has actually been retitled in some editions October Sky, you should pick it up because it is a terrific read. Homer Hickam here on the Paul Harris Show on News Talk 1120 KMOX.